Today I'm going to preach a sermon in a form that I was taught not to do in seminary. Perhaps when I'm done, you'll agree with my professors. However, I've been asked by some of you to talk about my experience this summer of going into a treatment program for alcoholics. It was certainly not something I wanted to do. In fact, it was the last thing I wanted to do, to admit that I had a problem with alcohol. My use of alcohol started when I turned 18 and was legally able to drink. It was always around in our household and was a regular appearance at family events. I didn't know until a few years later that there was an issue with alcohol in our family. In fact, alcoholism, it turns out, is everywhere in our family tree. I am told, with a grandparent who is alcoholic, one is 4 times more likely to succumb to alcoholism. And with a parent, one is 8 times more likely. I had 2 grandparents who were problem drinkers, and my father, who just died in May, was very likely an alcoholic. I don't remember a picture I have of him without a glass in his hand. My cousin Zach drank himself to death at the age of 48, and we buried him in 2012. My mother's siblings have been challenged with alcoholism, and my father's sister died of complications of it. My own siblings have had issues with it, albeit other complications factor in. Because of all this, I thought I was being careful enough with alcohol, but it turns out I wasn't. Although my drinking had increased over time, it became a true problem when I moved here. The root causes of alcoholism are stress and anxiety, dealing with a cancer diagnosis, taking a new call, and starting an advanced degree program created the perfect storm. I might have gotten to the same place no matter what, but these 3 things exacerbated it. I want to be very clear here. I am not blaming this church for my illness. Please do not leave here saying that I blamed St. Andrew's for what is clearly my problem. For me, drinking while under stress of a new call, working through cancer surgery and radiation, and studying long winter nights, which turned into long days no matter what time of year, got me to the point of not being able to stop drinking. From what I am learning in Alcoholics Anonymous, or AA as I will refer to it, no one is sure where the point is that a person crosses over from drinking for pleasure to drinking because he or she has to. And no one sets out to be an alcoholic. On May 7th of this year, I graduated with a Doctor of Ministry degree. On May 20th, my father died. And on June 17th, I was in the ER at Munson, and then on my way to a detox unit in Boyne Falls to begin the journey of becoming sober. It was a God thing when my husband David, who has been an absolute rock through all of this, called 22 treatment facilities until he found one that would take me that day. I ended up where I needed to be as I began slogging out of an alcohol-induced fog and moved toward working the 12 steps in a loving and caring medical and professional environment. Because of the way things took place, no one at St. Andrew's knew what had happened. I deeply regret the difficulty my actions placed on all of you, and especially on those of you who had to step up to do memorial services, worship services, and to lead the church in a time of crisis. Although some of you suspected something going on long before I admitted it, it still was an unpleasant surprise and a shock. When I found out Monday from David, after I'd gone in on Friday, that some of you were afraid my cancer had returned, I knew I had to write something to the whole church. Hence the email blast that went out the next day. The email turned out to be a God thing too, because a counselor at Bear River assumed I would not tell the congregation about my illness, and I was able to tell her that I already had. Although I was too foggy to realize it then, honesty has made it easier to transition back, because I didn't have to lie about where I'd been. I don't think I could have, frankly, pulled it off anyway, because I live such a public life. In treatment, I learned that alcoholism is a disease of the brain, even though it can affect other parts of the body, like the liver, for instance. Alcoholism causes our brains to work abnormally and make abnormal behavior seem normal to the crazy thinking of a drinker, such that one can drink oneself to death. I am extremely grateful today that I did not kill myself, someone else, or end up in jail because of my using. And on a sad note, our group in treatment, which had people who dealt with all forms of substance abuse, has already lost a 25-year-old to overdose. So I'm relieved and grateful to report to you this morning that I just had my annual physical and I am in fine physical health. I was afraid I couldn't hold it together for this one, so y'all will just have to bear with me. So upon my return from treatment and with an aftercare program, the professional staff and I worked together. I began attending AA meetings. I have found several that I like, and I am currently working with a group through the Big Book, which is the AA, the main book of AA, as well as attending several meetings a week to understand more about the disease of alcoholism and to help me stay sober. I have a sponsor who is someone who is helping me work through the 12 steps, and I also have a recovery coach through another organization in Northern Michigan. A recovery coach is a longtime sober person, and the woman who is helping me is guiding me through 8 areas of wellness. With all this said, staying sober is something someone has to really want, and I want it. I am doing everything I can to maintain my sobriety and to be a good pastor to you. And I understand that being vigilant about this is something I will always have to do. When I told my sponsor I was going to do this Sunday, she said, "Ann, remember that you are in the grip of something bigger than you are." In other words, the disease of alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And from what I've picked up from some of you here, you know just how difficult it can be. Many of you have reported to me through the lovely cards of support you sent, as well as personal stories about friends, coworkers, and family members you know who are dealing or have dealt with alcoholism or substance abuse. It can be a dark and difficult road. As I know from personal family experience, it doesn't always end well. Because of that, some of you may be concerned about me, but perhaps even more, you are concerned about the church. So to that, I will say 5 things. 1, please call and or make an appointment with me to talk with me. I'm glad to field to the best of my ability any questions you have, and I would be pleased to listen to your experience and concerns. 2, one of the terms of call that was in my salary package when I was came here was a 3-month sabbatical after every 4 years of service. I've told the session that I will give up a month of the 3 months that I have coming to me in exchange for my absence this summer. The only caveat being that you don't ask your next pastor to give up personal leave for medical leave because Reverend Ann did. 3, In case you're worried about my leaving, I'm not planning on taking another call anytime soon, and I truly love being your pastor. I hope to remain here as your pastor for many years to come. Unfortunately, with this summer's revelation, I am a very human pastor in your midst. 4. With the age of many in this church, you may have been brought up to see alcoholism as a character flaw. With that, you may be angry with me, or you may have written me completely off. Normal drinkers often have a difficult time understanding why someone doesn't just stop drinking. Believe me when I say, if I could have stopped on my own, and I tried several times, I would have. Still, there may be some who can no longer trust me as their pastor. I pray to God every day that I can regain your trust and realize that that will take time. And most disturbing and sad to me will be those of you who will never trust me again, no matter what. 5. This congregation has excellent leaders, members, and friends. And you are already revealing your ability to be resilient. You have come out of difficult things before, and you are doing it now. The title of this sermon has at least two meanings. One having to do with the fact that the disease of alcoholism is bigger than any one person can deal with, which is even more important. Number two, the fact that we are all in the grip of something bigger than we are. Truthfully, it is someone bigger than we are. For me personally, if there's going to be any kind of real recovery, it will take place because of the grace of God, my higher power, who I must lean on to direct my life. Now that may sound funny coming from a pastor, but all of us veer off the road of faith when our ego gets in the way. And my ego and my drinking got me so far off the road that I ended up careening off the side of the road into a ravine. And there were some days when I didn't think I would ever return. However, through daily prayer, worship, meditation, and reconnecting to God, I know in the depths of my being that I am in the grip of someone bigger than I am. For that, I cannot put into words my gratitude. But I'm not the only one. Even though I've talked so much about myself today, you may think so. No, you are also in the grip of someone bigger than you are. As physicist Albert Einstein frequently said, no problem can be solved by the same consciousness that caused the problem in the first place. Any problem you are having will be best solved when God is at the center of its unfolding. I imagine every one of you can think of a time when God saw you through something you couldn't imagine you would get through. All the time in our lives, we are meeting new and different issues, things we've never dealt with before. Both passages read today speak to our inability to lead our lives by ourselves and God's ability to lead us when we live as God intends. Choose life so that you and your descendants may live, writes the Deuteronomist. And from the Apostle Paul, as recorded in the Message, it is obvious what kind of life develops out of trying to get your own way all the time. Trinket gods, magic show religion, a brutal temper, lopsided pursuits, the vicious habit of depersonalizing everyone into a rival, uncontrolled and uncontrollable addictions. I could go on, Paul says. But when we live God's way, God brings gifts into our lives. Things like affection for others, exuberance for life, and serenity. I don't know why it is that the life Jesus reveals is the one that shows its power best in weakness. It's often by some big smackdown, as young people say today, that we are forced to utterly rely on God's grace. It's usually in the form of some death, like death of control or powerlessness over alcohol, for instance. But I do agree with Richard Rohr when he says, "Let me sum up then the foundational ways that I believe Jesus and the 12 steps of AA are saying the same thing, but with different vocabulary. We suffer to get well. We surrender to win. We die to live. And we give it away to keep it. For the ways I have hurt you, I am deeply sorry." When we stumble and fall, which we will surely do in this life, may we be granted the grace to find ourselves in the grip of someone bigger than we are. May God's purpose for us on the journey light not only our hearts, but other hearts also. Now to the one who, by the power at work within us, is able to do far more abundantly than all we can ask or imagine. To God be the glory in the church and in Christ Jesus to all generations, forever and ever. Amen.